So all you performers out there, whether you are listening as a golfer, an athlete, or a leader, an executive, one of the things that I really want to talk about today is the habit of being scrappy. What does it mean to be scrappy? And how do you do it? Why is it important? In this episode, we're going to explore ways to use scrappiness as a habit and a tool for you to become a peak performer. Tune in. Welcome to the Mastering Mindset Podcast with Dr. Matt, where we will explore mastering your mindset. Hi, and welcome. Now, I'm really excited about today's topic on getting scrappy. You know, I've been doing a series on peak performance, especially building proper habits in your life so that you can have sustaining behaviors that will lead you more to peak performance states. Now, you know, in the past couple episodes, we talked about various habit formation and what makes a habit and what makes a peak performer. Today, we're going to be diving in to one of the six habits of peak performers that I call getting scrappy. This is a really good one. And I want to really dive into some models, meaning like people out there who exemplify scrappiness and why it's important for us to learn some of these traits so that we can use it in our life to become more of a peak performer. Now, Sarah Blakely, many of you may or may not have heard this name. She's a self-made billionaire and one of the first female billionaires out there. I really like her example of scrappiness. She was telling Mark Cuban on Shark Tank that, you know, being scrappy is part of her DNA. It's just how she was raised by her parents. And she told a story. Her dad always asked around the table, "What's one thing you failed at?" Think about that. Imagine if you started to normalize failure as not something that we try to avoid or we try to kind of be shameful about. But what if we normalized failure as part of life and almost flipped the script and celebrated it, asking the people that we are surrounding ourselves with, whether you're a parent, talking in a conversation with your child or children, you know, and talking about failure, or you are a leader and normalizing failure with your team. I'm just saying, okay, what did we fail at today? And what did we learn? How can we grow? You know, in the previous episodes, we really dived into growth mindset leadership and what that's all about. Failure is not an act. I mean, it's not a if we fail. Failure is when we fail. What do we do in the face of failure? You know, some say they never really use the term failure because there's no failure if you can learn from that event. But in this case, Sarah Blakely's dad went around the table and was asking everybody, what did you fail at? What did you learn? How can we grow? So this mindset is something that Sarah Blakely internalized at a very young age. Growing up, she wasn't afraid of failure. At 27 years old, Sarah Blakely was going door to door selling fax machines. Like she had this entrepreneurial spirit and she didn't have much money in her bank account, but she did what she can. She used what she had and she started, you know, where she was at. So part of being scrappy is not looking at, oh man, if I had those clubs, then I would have, you know, I could shoot so much better. Or if I had that person's game, or if I had those resources and the funding, then I can. You know what we call that in psychology? We call that the hedonic treadmill. Hedonic treadmill is when you're constantly on this treadmill looking at a future state of saying, okay, when I get there, then I'll be happy. Okay, if I had $1 million, if only I had $1 million, then I'll be happy. If I found that right person and I was in a marriage, then I'd be happy. Man, if only I had the team to support me to make it this far, then I'll be happy. You see, that's a trap. If we look at mindset and we think about it, you know, not being in a present state, not looking at the resources and things that we have right now within us or around us that we can use, and we constantly look into the future of saying, I don't have enough right now. I need X, Y, and Z in order for me to be happy or in order for me to be successful. But you take apart all these successful leaders, all these successful entrepreneurs and athletes, golfers, you name it. They start where they are. They do what they can. And they use what they have. That's a famous quote by Arthur Ashe. Now, what gets in the way of that? You know, why do we get on this hedonic treadmill of thinking that I don't have enough right now, that only if I had that, then I can do X, Y, and Z. Only if I had that, I can be happy. Why? What happens in our mind, in our brain, that gets us in this trap? A lot of times, it's perfection. A lot of times, we start a project or we start something and we don't finish it. We don't follow through because it's not perfect. I think it's Winston Churchill that said, perfection is the enemy of progress. And Zig Ziglar, I love this quote. Zig Ziglar once said that you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great. Okay? You got to start in order for you to even begin this journey of greatness and peak performance in your life. Think about what stops you from starting. Think about whatever it is you're wanting to start in your life. It could be, you know, you're trying to do a swing change and you're trying to see a coach, but you don't have the resources. So what do? You start watching YouTubes, right? You start reading some books or magazines. You start going on Instagram, trying to figure out a coach and a style that you like. And you start looking at drills that people are using. You have resources and information that's thrown at you. Oftentimes a little too much, right? We live in a day and age where you can get too much free information and everyone's an expert, right? Everyone's a coach. Everyone's teaching something. Who do you listen to? How do you weed that out? All that information, how do you sift that out and pick things that resonate with you in your life? You see, if you don't have the resources, if you don't have the funds, does that prevent you from getting started? If you don't have the talents, if you don't have the ability or the skills to be X, Y, and Z, or to be, you know, where you ideally want to be, does that prevent you from getting started? It's a habit and a mindset shift that allows us to start where we are, do what we can, and use what we have. The first thing I'm going to encourage all of us to do, look around your life to see what resources you have. What skills do you possess right now? Let's say you don't take any kind of training course. You don't have anything in your life that you add into, but you just assess, what do I currently have in my life? What skills do I have? What ability am I good at? What are people usually commending me or praising me about? What are those skills? Think about and assess your baseline. Okay, what are currently, if this is my goal, what are some current abilities and skills and resources that I currently have that will help me progress one step closer to that goal. So we have to identify. That's the first thing we need to do. We need to self-assess and self-administer. Okay, what do I have currently in my life that will help me get one step, one inch closer towards that goal? Number two, you got to identify what it is you want to grow into or the goal that you're trying to achieve. So it can be reversed, meaning you can assess what goal it is you want first and then figure out what ability you have, or you can do it the other way around. If you're not quite sure, okay, what am I trying to do? Maybe you can ask yourself, what am I good at first? What do I enjoy doing? What's my passions? And then figuring out, what do people usually give me positive feedback on? And then align yourself to a particular goal that you might want to achieve using that model. So number one, either set the goal, the vision, and then number two, identify your ability and what you have, or flip them around. Identify your ability and what you have, and then set the goal and the vision. Does that make sense? So that's one way of looking at starting. Now, it's about identifying the blocks. What gets in the way of you starting? Is it perfection? Is it self-criticism? Is it doubt and fear of failing or messing up? This is where we work. This is where we play. And I love this area of vulnerability because this is where I see most human beings grow. It's uncomfortable, but this is the vulnerable place is where humans grow. Now, at our academy, at MPGA, we have a mantra that we preach. Pursue progress, not perfection. What does that mean? Pursue progress, not perfection. It's just as what Winston Churchill said. Perfection is the enemy of progress. You see, in psychology, in developmental psychology, there is a researcher, a theorist named Winnicott. And Winnicott coined a term called good enough mothering or good enough parents. And what this was basically enabling parents and mothers in particular was this ability to give themselves permission to just be good enough and not perfect. My wife is Brené Brown certified, right? She's a Daring Way certified facilitator. And she told me that this shame that women have compared to the relationship that men have to shame is very different. And the difference is that women experience shame and it's very entangled and it's like a spider web. Shame can come from many different sources. And oftentimes women feel shame when they aren't all put together. When they're doing things and they're breaking a sweat and they're not enough. They're not being enough. So they often have an armor, like they put on this armor, doing everything they can to be a perfect mother, a perfect wife, a perfect daughter, right? A perfect person in the workplace and a leader, and not break a sweat. It's almost like they have to be everything to everyone all at once without breaking a sweat. That's exhausting. That's why if you look at Emily and Amelia Nagoski's book, Burnout, How to Complete the Stress Cycle, they talk about the human giver syndrome pertaining to women. The human giver syndrome, right? Think about this. The human giver syndrome is when a human gives so much compassion, gives so much of themselves to other people without filling up their cup and their well. So who gets burnt out? Who gets the nasty end of the stick? Even though it's a natural thing where we love this person, we love these people, so we give our all to them. But in the end, we hurt. We burn out. Our well is empty. Now, for men, their relationship to shame is not as complex from the research of Brené Brown, right? It's mainly about not wanting to appear weak. So humiliation, especially public humiliation or appearing weak, is what triggers shame in men. Now, we think about this. The reason why we're talking about this relationship to shame and shame in our life, or embarrassment, fear of failure, these things can potentially be barriers to starting, to pursuing progress. Now, oftentimes when we have these huge projects or big goals, we often get overwhelmed, right? Social comparison kicks in, where we start to compare ourselves to others that we're seeing on Instagram reels or that we're seeing in life. Oh, why can't I have or do what they're doing? You know, why don't I have $10 million? Why aren't I traveling the way that they are? How lucky are they? Man, I'm looking at my life and my life feels so miserable. That social comparison defeats us. It really bogs us down and prevents us from looking at our resources now to start. It prevents us from pursuing progress. So social comparison is often what I call the enemy to progress as well. It's a barrier. When you compare your chapter one to someone's chapter 27, they've started 10 years before you did, and you don't see that. So they may appear successful, and they are successful, and it might appear like they, you know, had overnight success. But if you look at all the different tries and failures and things that they went through and how many years they put into this craft, this one singular focus craft, but all we see is a 90-second reel of proclaiming how successful they are. And we start to compare ourselves, our chapter one, when we're starting out on something, to their chapter 27 or 55. They might have gotten a head start and they might be further along, but that shouldn't prevent us from starting now. Because if you start now, if you pursue after progress and just put one foot in front of the other, and you have focused direction, if you know where you're going, if you have an idea of the goals that you are setting out in front of your life, and you're assessing the skills and the ability and the resources and the things that you have currently within you and around you, then it's the habit of just starting. Now, one technique that I often use is the Pomodoro method. Many of you might have heard this method. It's been popularized in leadership, you know, books and techniques, but I'm going to simplify it for you. If you have an activity, let's say you have a homework assignment, or you have an email that you need to send out, that's a very important email, or you have to read a proposal, whatever it is that's going to require a long duration of focus, attention, rather than trying to just dive right in and constantly being bombarded with distractions, chunk it up in little segments. So give yourself, time yourself with a 25-minute timer and set it on your phone. 25 minutes of full, no distraction engagement, full engagement on the task at hand, whatever it might be. And then set another timer for 5 minutes. After the 25 minutes, you're going to give yourself a 5-minute break. So that's one Pomodoro cycle. 25 minutes of engaging in one activity and 5 minutes to have a break and reset. You can stretch, you can have water, you can, you know, listen to music, you can go on a walk, give yourself a break in those 5 minutes. And that when that 5-minute timer runs out, then you do another cycle, 25 minutes of full engagement and a 5-minute block of break time. One other thing that I would suggest is, let's say you're trying to improve on your golf game and you give yourself a couple hours to practice on the range. Say, okay, I'm going to go to the range and I'm just going to randomly practice. And let's say you don't have a set time. You're just going to the range to practice to get better. Give yourself a specific focused attention, deliberate practice routine. If you look at professionals, if you look at peak performers, their practice sessions are very structured. They're very purposeful and structured. The way that they approach work, grind, practice, whether you're in the office or you're on the course, it's very purposeful, it's very intentional, it's very structured. I'm going to share something called block practice and play practice. Okay. So block practicing is when you're practicing specifically on techniques, on mechanical things in your life. In this case, we're talking about golf. Block practice is when you set your time to just focus on drills and focus on your technique. Play practice is when you're not thinking so much about technique, but you're playing golf. You're playing the game. You're going through every shot. You're going through your pre-shot routine. You're going through your mantras. You're looking at your target. You're letting go. You're focusing on commitment. You're focusing on the things that you have control over. If you can break down your block practicing and your play practicing and identify that, you can have more structure in your practice routines. So you can say to yourself, for the next 25 minutes, I'm going to practice block practice. I'm going to practice my technique and I'm going to do some drills for the next 25 minutes. So whatever club you're using, you can go going into your practice with the 7-iron. You can go, you know, just go up or go down and practice your sand wedge. All you're focused on is technique. Don't worry about the outcome of the shot. You're just trying to get that feel of your swing. Now, when that 25 minutes are up, then you can introduce and do maybe 25 minutes of play practice. So then, if you're still on the range, I would play golf. I would start with your tee shot, with your driver. I would imagine a course that you know very well or that you're prepping for. So a lot of my players, they play some holes that they are competing in. So a lot of my professional tour players, they would practice on the range and they would practice the distance of the par threes. So they know the distance ahead of time. They have their yardage book and they practice specifically those yardages. And then they kind of go back to the first tee and imagine what's their first hole shot. And they would play the holes that they're prepping for to play the course. So play practice is all about drilling the mental side of the game. So you have the block practice, which is the technical, the mechanical side of the game. And play practice is when you let go of the mechanical and you just play. You're visualizing, you're shot shaping, you're imagining the holes, and you're playing with a little bit of pressure. So on the range, you're putting boundaries in OB and water, and you're using your imagination to play the shots, and you only get one shot at a time. So you go through your entire process, your entire routine. This especially works with the short game area. So in block practice on short game, you might, you know, bring a shag bag and you dump it right in front of you, and you're hitting for 25 minutes, just working on your drills and working on distancing and seeing if you can hit it 25 yards, 30 yards, 35 yards, 40 yards, 45 yards, and just trying to get down your distance and your mechanical and technical things with your short game. And then you switch over to play practice and you just grab one ball. And if you have a short game area where you can chip and putt, usually what I like to do is randomly throw my ball around the green and I would try to play it. And every single play, is an up and down opportunity to save par. So I throw it in the bunker, for example, just one ball, and I would go through my whole routine. I would even bring the rake in the practice bunker. I'd bring the rake like I would do on the course. So I would simulate that whole play. And then I would hit it out of the bunker, and then I would rake it, and I would go and mark my ball, and I would finish it out and try to make par. That's play practice. So I would switch my mindset from the block practice, the technical, to play practice. And if you can do this more and more in your practice routine and how you warm up, then you're going to improve significantly and become a peak performing golfer, right? So just starting, start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can. Perfection is the enemy of progress. And we're all about making progress. We're all about starting now, because your chapter one, if you start now and keep going and you don't stop and you're very focused, then you move on to chapter two. And eventually you're writing chapter three. If you keep going, one day you're going to be at chapter 27 and someone starting off on chapter one is going to be looking at you and wishing that they were where you're at currently. Get off the hedonic treadmill. If you're on it, thinking that the future state will bring you happiness, and look around you now to see what you have, to use what you can, and to do, just simply do. Start. Begin. Whatever it is, just start. Identify what it is you're wanting to do that you've been delaying. And I beg you, I encourage you to just start, begin. Even if it's crappy, even if it's a mess, even if it's a complete failure, just start. Put the pen or the pencil to the paper and begin writing your story. And don't stop. Take it one step at a time. And if you run into barriers, understand that it's about progress. It's not about perfection. I wish you the best of luck. We're on the series of building peak performing habits, and I look forward to being on this journey with you, one step at a time.